All right, welcome back. Now we're going to look at plant-based diets, vegetarian, vegan, and raw vegan diets. Now, if you don't understand what those terms are, let me just go ahead and preface that really quick. So a vegetarian diet generally includes fish. Some vegetarians don't include fish, but it'll include fish, it'll include eggs, and it will also include dairy products. As you move from vegetarian into vegan, you drop off the animal products. And a raw vegan diet has no animal products in it. And also, raw vegan advocates do not cook their food, or at least eat very small amounts of cooked food. Okay? So vegetarian, vegan, and raw vegan. Now, before we get into the data in this section, you should note that I ate a vegetarian, and then a vegan, and then a raw live vegan diet over a 17-year period of my life. I still eat a largely plant-based live food diet. I have a master's in raw live vegan nutrition, and I definitely advocate a move up what I call the spectrum of diet through the vegetarian, vegan, and raw live vegan diets to heal the major health challenges that we have. My juice feasting program is a raw live vegan program. My interest is in health, though, and those of us eating a plant-based diet will be wiser than ever to heed this B12 data and happily respond proactively so that B12 deficiency becomes a story of the past for such a compassionate and beautiful community of eaters. So with that being said, here is the data on plant-based diets and B12. A common perception is that B12 deficiency is only found in vegetarians and vegans. And while the data show that plant-based eaters do have lower B12 levels, take a look at what Dr. Gabriel Cousins, MD, author of Conscious Eating, has to say about the wide spectrum of the population that tests deficient in vitamin B12. Many people have heard that vegans are low in B12. That's absolutely true. Meat eaters are deficient too. There's a minimum level of B12 you need to survive and a maximum level that is optimum for long-term health. At the minimum level, 80% of vegans are deficient, but about 40% of meat eaters are deficient at these levels as well, and it could be higher. When you look at the optimal intake of B12, meat eaters are equally deficient. It is likely that 90% of meat eaters and vegans are probably deficient when you're talking about optimal levels of B12. The best thing is for everyone to take B12 supplements. When I was at Columbia Medical School in the 1960s, Dr. Cousins writes, they did a study that found that 30% of people judged to have adequate B12 levels, mostly meat eaters, had dramatically positive results to getting B12 shots. Depression went away, and a sense of well-being was reported in many study participants. Even in the 1960s, they knew that on average, people are low in B12. I just want to emphasize the point that everybody is low in B12. It is a big problem. End quote. Vegan health practitioner Dr. Joel Fuhrman, author of New York Times best-selling book Eat to Live, says, quote, "It is entirely irresponsible for a health professional not to recommend B12 supplementation in some form or frequent monitoring of methylmalonic acid in your urine, with some blood tests for those who do not consume any animal products in their diet." No controversy exists here. I agree with Dr. Fuhrman, except to note that a urine MMA test is the gold standard, not doing a blood test. We'll cover this in the section View Number 3, the gold standard for testing B12. A key piece of research comparing B12 levels among vegans, lacto-vegetarians, lacto-ovo-vegetarians, and semi-vegetarians, some eating meat, what Dr. Neil Barnard calls lacto-ovo-pesco-pollo-vegetarians, you may know some of those, shows that as animal products are removed from your diet, the amount of serum B12 or the amount of B12 in your blood drops significantly. Here's the research. Serum vitamin B12 and blood cell values in vegetarians from the Annals of Nutrition and Metabolism. I've got that linked in on the B12 course book. Tom Billings of BeyondVeg.com reports on this study. He says, Dong and Scott in 1982 took blood samples at the 1979 annual convention of the American Natural Hygiene Society. Now I'll pause right there. American Natural Hygiene Society. People who do natural hygiene predominantly eat a very plant-based diet. They tested the samples from those folks for serum or blood levels of B12 and other parameters of interest. A total of 83 volunteers at that convention provided blood samples. Each individual in the study provided a detailed dietary information via survey form, which was about the individual's consumption of animal foods, including eggs and dairy, and also asked for a typical daily diet. Now, based on the dietary data provided on that form, those folks were classified according to their diet, with vegans being defined as those who consume no animal foods, lacto-vegetarians as those who consumed dairy as their only animal product, lacto-ovo-vegetarians as those who consumed dairy and eggs, and semi-vegetarians as those who consumed animal flesh foods two or less times per month. It should be noted here that because the subjects were recruited at an American Natural Hygiene Society convention, and the American Natural Hygiene Society emphasized raw foods at the time, at least some of the subjects in the vegan category presumably were raw or predominantly raw vegans. So Dong and Scott, who did the study in 1982, report this. Among subjects who did not supplement their diets with B12 or multiple vitamin tablets, 92% of the vegans, 64% of the lacto-vegetarians, 47% of the lacto-ovo-vegetarians, and 29% of the semi-vegetarians had blood levels of B12 less than 200 units per milliliter. That's the lower limit of the normal range. And remember, they had less than 200. The Japanese set it at 550. Their average blood levels of B12 of the dietary groups increased with the increasing dietary sources of B12. Now, in those groups, the people with the best B12 status were the semi-vegetarians, followed by the lacto-ovo-vegetarians, and then the lacto-vegetarians, and then the vegans. Now, 92% of the vegans in this study had extremely low B12. In the course book, you can see the chart of these mean serum B12 levels, or these average B12 levels of all the participants at the convention. Note that the serum B12 levels, or the blood B12 levels for the vegans in the range regarded as deficient. The last paragraph in orange above, which you'll see in the course book, 92% of those vegans are low in B12, but only 29% of the semi-vegetarians tested low. Now, of course, the low that they're testing here is really, really low. It's also important to note the cutoff level of 200 units per milliliter used by the study, that's so low, so the semi-vegetarians who were not below 200 units per milliliter could also have been low by current standards. But the fewer the animal products, and this is the main point beyond all the data and everything else, just hear this point. The fewer the animal products in the diet, the higher the levels of B12 deficiency. Everybody, even vegans, have to agree on this. That's what the data shows. So the study of B12 levels in new vegans, how fast does your B12 level drop when eating a plant-based diet? One study's looked at the changes in your blood levels of B12 in new vegans. Now, we've gone over this before, so if you already got this, you can fast forward here really quick. All four students with serum B12 in the 600 to 900 range, once they became a new vegan, fell to below 500 in just 2 months. 10 students followed the diet for 5 months, meaning a vegan diet for 5 months, and their average blood levels of B12 went from 417 to about 276. After 5 months, two of the students in the study went from normal B12 to below normal B12. These are significant drops in a relatively short period of time and would indicate that a vegan diet supplies the body with little to no dietary B12 benefits. I hope I've driven that point home enough in this course. What I have below in the course book are some videos from prominent vegans and raw vegans talking about these very issues for people on a plant-based diet, just to back up what I'm already saying here, and so that you don't think that I'm somehow bashing a plant-based diet. I have a master's degree in it. If there was some way that we could improve that status, dietarily speaking, for people on a plant-based diet, we'd do it. But we haven't found any, and so we're looking at supplementation long-term. The global data, evidence that low dietary animal protein can be a contributing factor to B12 deficiency. In the Journal of Nutrition in 2003, researchers reported, quote, "It's becoming clear that the prevalence of vitamin B12 deficiency is very high in many poorer regions of the world, including Kenya, India, Guatemala, and Mexico. A number of studies now show the vitamin B12 status of lacto-ovo-vegetarians, or people eating milk and eggs, in industrialized countries to be considerably worse than that of omnivores, people who eat animal products, presumably because of the lower amount of vitamin B12 in milk than in meat. Okay, so if you're just doing milk products, you're not getting the kind of vitamin B12 that you're getting from eating meat sources. Also consider the following journal articles on vegetarian diets and lower B12 levels. And I have those listed out in the course book. So if you have a friend or family member who's been eating a long-term vegetarian, vegan, or raw vegan diet, this is a great course book and great information to get out to that person, particularly if they're not supplementing with vitamin B12 or if they're suffering from the causes or the symptoms that I discussed earlier in the course. If you're seeing those playing out for some of your friends on a plant-based diet, by all means, get them this information. It's not an affront to the diet that they're eating. It doesn't mean that they have to stop eating a plant-based diet, but they should start supplementing. Next in the course book, I have 3 studies on raw live vegans and B12 status. The first is a longitudinal study on raw live vegans compared with omnivores called Vitamin B12 Status of Long-Term Adherence of a Strict Uncooked Vegan Diet or a Raw Vegan Diet. And you can download the study from the link in the course book. But here's the conclusion. In the longitudinal part of the study, food consumption data were collected and blood samples were taken from 9 living food eaters or raw vegans on 2 occasions, 2 years apart. The cross-sectional study revealed significantly lower serum vitamin B12 concentrations in the vegans compared with their matched omnivorous controls. And here's the chart below in the course book of vitamin B12 levels for the participants in the studies, both the raw vegans and the omnivores. Note when you look at that chart that the average serum B12 levels for both the raw vegans and the omnivores was too low. Both groups were too low. The Japanese set the levels at 550. The highest level measured for an omnivore was around 480. So both the raw live vegans and their matched omnivorous controls, which averaged about 311 actually, are in need of B12 support. And that's one of the main points of this book. Doesn't matter what diet you eat, you are in need of B12 supplementation more than likely. I have a second and a third study which you can also follow up on, and I've got them from the Annals of Nutrition and Metabolism and so forth in the course book, so do follow up on those. It will be very easy for you to drive this point home not only for yourself, but for your friends and your loved ones who are in the plant-based community if that's the case. This is not a strike against eating a plant-based diet, but we do need to heed this data when adopting one, and it's so easy to take care of this. Next, we're going to look at homocysteine levels and B12 as we take this first view. Low B12 levels go along with high homocysteine levels, and high homocysteine means you've got high levels of inflammation in your system. It's particularly a precursor for cardiovascular disease or heart disease. If you're eating a plant-based diet and you have low B12 levels, you almost certainly have high homocysteine. As a nutritionist and researcher, I can tell you that the low B12, high homocysteine combination could potentially wipe out the health protective benefits you should be deriving from eating a plant-based diet. I cannot state this strongly enough. This is clearly shown in the Journal of Nutrition in their study, quote, "Long-term consumption of a raw food diet is associated with favorable serum LDL cholesterol and triglycerides, which would be a good thing, but also with elevated plasma homocysteine and low serum HDL cholesterol in humans." Okay? The article states, quote, "Nearly half of all raw food diet followers had a functional vitamin B12 deficiency, defined as low plasma vitamin B12, so they got low B12, in combination with elevated blood levels of homocysteine." And you can read the whole report linked right into the course book below. Dr. Gabriel Cousins writes, "Using the gold standard methylmalonic or MMA test, that's a urinary test, studies show that without supplementing B12, vegans have higher homocysteine levels than lacto-ovo-vegetarians and non-vegetarians, which means they're deficient in B12. The good news, of course, Dr. Cousins says, is that vitamin B12 supplementation will decrease these high homocysteine levels back to a normal range. High homocysteine levels are connected with the potential for heart disease, arterial destruction, and neurological pathologies. Other diseases associated with elevated homocysteine are Alzheimer's, age-related hearing loss, neural tube defects, recurrent loss of pregnancy, and increased mortality. If I can indulge you, the researchers from the study cited above drew a graph of the results of raw vegans' B12 levels and their homocysteine levels. Healthy homocysteine levels are from 2.2 to 13.2 units. What you'll notice in the graph that I have in the B12 exposed coursebook for you is that as you move to the right in this chart, on average, the dots get lower. In this case, the data shows that among raw vegans in the study, as their B12 levels got higher, their homocysteine levels decreased. It's very important to your health to keep your homocysteine levels down with healthy B12 levels. Therefore, when you use the gold standard urinary MMA test to look at your B12 levels, have a homocysteine test done as well. These are excellent. These two are excellent reference points for your past and your future with regards to B12 levels and your health. Next is pregnancy and B12. Low animal foods and low B12 among pregnant women and their children. Women with the lowest B12 levels had 5 times the risk of having a child with a neural tube defect compared to women with the highest B12 levels. Women who consume little or no meat or animal foods were the most likely to have low B12 levels, according to a joint study by the U.S. National Institutes of Health, Trinity College Dublin, and the Health Research Board of Ireland. Dr. Gabriel Cousins, MD, also has some excellent guidance on pregnancy and B12. Quote, vitamin B12 deficiency is particularly true with newborn babies, especially babies of vegan live food nursing mothers who are not using B12 supplementation. In contrast to the average adult storage of 2,000 to 3,000 units of B12, newborns of mothers with normal B12 have about 25 units. Studies have shown that the milk during the first week of life does contain large amounts of B12. This means that the B12 storage in infants at birth is normally adequate to last the first few weeks of life. Afterwards, they must get it from the breast milk or some other source. If a vegan or a live food mother is already B12 deficient during pregnancy, the baby may be born with seriously low B12 levels and develop clinical signs of deficiency as soon as 2 weeks. The general research suggests that even among non-vegetarians, B12 can be insufficient in infants, and that perhaps all breastfeeding mothers should consider B12 supplements for themselves and their infants during the time of breastfeeding. This lack of B12 in the mother's diet during pregnancy has been associated with a lack of myelin production, which is the coating of your nerves. It takes somewhere between 1 to 12 months to develop and manifests as a failure to thrive and slow developmental progression. The babies are often lethargic, lose their ability to use muscle adequately, and even their sensory attunement decreases. They also have irregular macrocytic anemia. The good news, Dr. Cousins writes, is that one major study in the United Kingdom in 1988 showed, in studying 37 vegan children, that there was a normal growth and development in children who were breastfed for 6 months at a minimum when there was B12 supplementation, end quote. If you're taking folic acid to prevent neural tube defects, please consider easily raising your B12 status by having them checked with the gold standard urinary methylmalonic acid test and by supplementing B12 appropriately as discussed in this course. Our future generations thank you. You might also like to know that in Japan, B12, the methylcobalamin form, is being used to treat infertility based on limited but very promising clinical research. Finally, one last study to consider. Long-term ovo-lacto-vegetarian diet impairs vitamin B12 status in pregnant women. The study states, quote, pregnant women consuming a long-term, predominantly vegetarian diet have an increased risk of B12 deficiency, end quote. Next up, breast cancer and B12 levels. This is very interesting stuff. Researchers at the Johns Hopkins University report that women with breast cancer tend to have lower B12 levels in their blood than do women without breast cancer. The researchers determined vitamin B12 concentrations in the blood, which of course, again, is not the best place to test, but this is what they tend to do. B12 concentrations in blood samples obtained in 1974 and 1989 and compared the levels found in 195 women who later developed breast cancer with the levels found in 195 women free of cancer. They found that postmenopausal women with the lowest serum levels of vitamin B12 had a 2.5 to 4 times greater likelihood of being in the breast cancer group than did women with the highest levels of B12. In a subsequent review of the findings, Dr. Choi, MD of Tufts University, speculates that a vitamin B12 deficiency may lead to breast cancer because it could result in less folate being available to ensure proper DNA replication and repair. Another excellent reason to maintain adequate B12 levels. Now, aging. Reasons the elderly are at high risk for vitamin B12 deficiency. Remember the section B12 metabolism, why you may not be getting it. Your body must be in top form, along with multiple lines, in order to absorb B12 from foods. Remember those 6 things that I went through that I said only if you have a degree in nutrition might you actually know what all those things were? You got to be in top form to have all those things in place to properly absorb B12 from your foods. And the bottom line on aging and B12, as many of us get older, the necessary factors to extract, transport, and assimilate B12 grow less adequate. Thankfully, we're now more aware of this, and we can take care of it so easily. B12 deficiency need not be a factor of aging anymore. Below in the course book, I've highlighted in red the most common reasons we see increased B12 deficiency as we age. But do note all the conditions. Many of these can be prevented by a diet that minimizes or eliminates processed food and emphasizes plenty of fresh, organic whole foods, regular exercise, an active life-affirming life, and appropriate B12 supplementation. So do note those things in the book. Among them, gastritis or an inflammation of your stomach, the frequent use of antacids, hypochloridia or low stomach acid production, alcoholism, increased incidence of thyroid conditions, dementia, poor appetite, having a sore tongue or mouth, which we tend to see as people get older. Okay. Increased incidence of gastrointestinal surgeries or the use of nitrous oxide during surgeries. A November 1995 review in Age and Aging, the journal Age and Aging, called B12 Deficiency and Mental Impairment in the Elderly, relates some important information about B12 deficiency and declining mental functioning. It also notes the importance of timely diagnosis and appropriate supplementation in improving B12 deficiency symptoms. Here are the notable excerpts from that study. Quote, cobalamin deficiency worsens with increasing age and has been implicated in declining cognitive function or mental function in elderly persons. Early diagnosis and treatment of B12 deficiency is thus important in preventing or slowing down neuropsychiatric disorders in the elderly. Quote, another manifestation of B12 deficiency is altered mental status, which consists of impairment of attention span, memory abstraction, or other intellectual functions with or without abnormalities of behavior, mood, affect, or logical thought. Neuropsychiatric symptoms may be the initial or the only manifestations of B12 deficiency. Cobalamin deficiency may result in a variety of mental symptoms, such as organic psychosis, dementia, paranoia, mental impairment, mania, slow mentation, hallucinations, and depression. And I'll just pause right here for a minute. If you've got somebody in your life who's over the age of 60 and they're starting to have mental issues or depression or paranoia or some kind of psychosis, definitely get their B12 status checked out with the 2 main ways, your urinary methylmalonic acid test and a homocysteine test. And if they're low, if I was over the age of 60, I'd get right into the injections and then move on to the B12 patches that we'll talk about in a little bit and using some sublingual B12 and make sure that you go back and test after several months and get that thing knocked out. There's no reason that we should be aging and have low B12 and the huge range of symptoms that result from having low B12. There's just no point in it anymore. This study continues with some other notable quotes. A finding of low serum B12 levels in patients with Alzheimer's disease and dementia but not in other forms of dementia or cognitive impairment, which suggests that B12 deficiency may cause specific types of dementia and is not the result of dementia with consequently insufficient dietary intake of vitamin B12. In a recent study, 18 subjects with low serum B12 and evidence of cognitive dysfunction were investigated. Only patients who had symptoms for less than a year showed improvement after therapy. The best clinical responders had been symptomatic for less than 6 months. The point of that quote being, the earlier that you get onto this B12 deficiency, the better the results are going to be as you fix it. So waste no time. If you're hearing this course right now and you're saying, wow, this sounds like I need to take action on this, please do. Do it now, do it now, do it now. That's the best way to take care of this. Your life and of those you love is going to benefit immensely by going ahead and taking action on this simple thing. Last quote from that, and then we're going to look at a turnaround of somebody who is 85 years old. These investigations indicate that the duration of the B12 deficiency plays an essential role in the degree of improvement of neuropsychiatric symptoms after treatment, meaning after getting adequate B12 into your system through supplementation. This is important because cobalamin deficiency may have to be acknowledged as a significant cause of neuropsychiatric disorders in elderly people. Early treatment may prevent irreversibility of the neuropsychological features and organic lesions of the brain related to the deficiency. So, early treatment, very important. Here's an encouraging study. Turnaround at 85. In a letter to the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, doctors from the Union Memorial Hospital in Baltimore report on a case of vitamin B12 deficiency. The patient was an 85-year-old man. He had developed progressive memory loss and lethargy over a 2-year period. So the guy was just tired and his mind wouldn't work in very well. Although his serum level or his blood level of vitamin B12 was actually in the currently accepted range, which probably is too low, the doctors decided to proceed with vitamin B12 therapy anyway. Lucky guy. The patient received an intramuscular injection of 1,000 micrograms of vitamin B12 for 3 consecutive days, and then 1,000 micrograms once a week for a month, and then one injection every month thereafter. By his 5th injection, so we're talking about the first few days of this study, his mental status had vastly improved, and his lethargy or his tiredness had completely vanished. The doctors concluded that the levels of blood B12 concentrations currently considered normal in the United States might actually be too low and should be reassessed. That's what Dr. Cousins found at Columbia Medical University, or Columbia Medical School. If you recall from earlier in the course, they took people who had normal, adequate levels of B12 and gave them injections anyway. And some of the folks that had that had reduced levels of inflammation and also depression and so forth. And they already tested normal for B12. So even those of us who are testing, quote unquote, in the normal range may very well benefit from getting B12 supplementation. So even if your results come back normal and you're seeing that you've got symptomologies that are linked with vitamin B12, give yourself a chance. Get an injection or get some proper human active B12 supplementation and see if those symptoms don't improve anyway. The lower limit of 200 units is based on the level which causes abnormalities in the blood. In contrast, the lower limit in Japan and some European countries is 500 to 550 and is based on a level which causes mental manifestations such as dementia and memory loss. So the doctors suggest that a trial of vitamin B12 therapy is warranted in patients with borderline B12 levels and is effective and inexpensive. So again, the level that we say is too low in the United States is about 200 units, and that is actually way too low. The Japanese set it at 550. So if you want to prevent dementia and memory loss, if you were just doing a blood test, which actually is not the best test, but if you were just doing blood tests, you want to be exceeding 550. But most doctors will say you're cool if you're just above 200. That's actually way too low. Finally, on the topic of aging and B12 deficiency, see the other studies that I have listed in the B12 Exposed course. Our next section, is it just the elderly? Nope. It was thought that in terms of age, only older age was a factor, but all age groups are susceptible to low B12. Catherine Tucker is a nutritional epidemiologist at the Jean Mayer USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University in Boston. Tucker and her colleagues wanted to get a sense of B12 levels spanning the adult population because most previous studies had focused on the elderly. That age group was thought to be at higher risk for deficiency. The researchers also expected to find some connection between dietary intake and blood levels of B12, even though other studies found no association. Some of the results were surprising. The youngest group, 26 to 49-year-olds, had about the same B12 status as the older group, 65 and up. "We thought," they said, "that low concentrations of B12 would increase with age, but we saw a high prevalence of B12, or low B12 rather, among even the youngest group." So I'll say that last quote again. "We thought that the low concentrations of B12 would increase with a person's age, but we saw a high prevalence of low B12 levels even among the youngest group that they studied." Next up, we're going to look at pharmaceutical drugs that lower B12 levels.